Welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes. 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. You can also interact with the two of us on Twitter using hashtag GiantsChat. We're going to recap the NFL playoffs, four games in the books from Wild Card Weekend. We're also going to provide the latest on the Giants coaching search. And Paul, let's start there. Four confirmed candidates that have interviewed for the job. Two coordinators from New England, Josh McDaniels, the offensive coordinator, Matt Patricia, the defensive coordinator, Steve Spagnuolo, obviously the interim head coach for the Giants, and then the fourth one, the latest one, is the Vikings offensive coordinator, Pat Shurmur.
Pat Shurmur is the one who at least has a relationship with someone currently on the staff. He was the offensive coordinator in St. Louis when Steve Spagnuolo was the head coach and then took the head coaching job in Cleveland. So there's a connection there between Spags and Pat Shurmur. One would wonder if either one of those guys was named the permanent head coach, if the other guy would be a part of the staff.
Because there's an established relationship.
There absolutely is. So that one is a bit intriguing to me at the very least. And certainly no one could argue the fact that Pat Shurmur has done wonders with the Vikings, considering the fact that, you know, Adrian Peterson was allowed to go. They went down to their third string quarterback. Then Cook gets drafted and winds up getting hurt.
Yeah, people forget about that. They lost him earlier this season.
I mean, you know, and let's not forget how they were able to quickly rebuild their offensive line. And somehow, you know, look, God bless him. Case Keenum, smoke and mirrors all season long, and
well. Somehow
he's still alive. He's still doing it.
Well, when you give a guy talent, look at what happens. And can't you say that for most quarterbacks, Paul, in the NFL?
No doubt.
If you look at what happened with him with the Rams, was it because Case Keenum wasn't a good quarterback, or was it the fact that he didn't have the talent around him?
I know this. So many people said coming out of college that he really did have enough of credentials to get serious looks, and not a lot of people did consider him seriously. They thought he was more or less of a joke. And I think the NFL isn't laughing right now because this dude's still playing.
And it's a big reason why the Vikings have been one of the most consistent teams in the NFL this season.
No
question. Let's not overlook that. Now, granted, they have a great defense, and Mike Zimmer deserves credit for what he's done with that defense since he arrived. But I think the fact that, as you noted, you lose your starting running back who you just drafted, you lose your starting running back. Remember, Sam Bradford, people forget, Paul, he played in the opener against the Saints, which is actually now going to be the rematch next weekend in the divisional round. And the Vikings offense did not miss a beat against that Saints team. They made mashed potatoes out of them. Then all of a sudden, New Orleans turned the corner, and Bradford goes down with an injury in that game, tried to play through it. He was never the same quarterback after that. Fortunately, you have a veteran like Case Keenum who came in, and the Vikings offense has not missed a beat. But he's got Adam Thielen. He's got Stephon Diggs. He has Kyle Rudolph. I think they've done a great job having a two-headed monster in the backfield between Latavius Murray and Jerick McKinnon because both of them have different styles of running. So he's got everything crossed off on the checklist. Receivers, tight end, strong running game, and a defense that takes pressure off of the quarterback. When you have those elements, I'm not saying that every quarterback's going to thrive in those circumstances, but more often than not, you're going to be a successful team.
Well, when you look at what they did in the offseason, they signed Riley Reiff.
Free agency.
Okay, yep. A guy who, you know, if you listen to this show, I targeted him for the Giants.
He was with the Lions.
But then the price became so exorbitant that, you know, he wound up going to Minnesota. He's certainly done a good job for them. Mike Remmers is another guy who's done a real good job for them, another free agent pickup. Who, between those two guys, they have done a sensational job in terms of getting that Vikings O-line back to respectability. Even Elfine, the center, who's a third-round pick. So think about this now for a second. For all you folks who don't think that Dave Gettleman can rebuild the Giants' offensive line enough to get Eli Manning a chance to succeed, just look at what the Vikings did in 1 year, replacing three starting offensive linemen. And all of a sudden, they're in the second round of the playoffs.
It changed things drastically because now you have a consistent running game and they're protecting the quarterback. Last season, the Vikings started off 5-0, Paul, and then they had issues on the offensive line between injuries and
Crippled.
The lack of good play.
Crippled.
Remember Jake Long? How many times did we talk about him on the program? They wound up bringing him in late in the season because
and
they were decimated.
He was totally shot.
He struggled. So that's what happened to the Vikings, and that's the reason why they finished 8-8. Play in the trenches impacted them immensely.
Anyway, back to your point of the Giants' candidates. So Shurmur certainly is an intriguing guy just based on what he has done with the Vikings. And again, we know he's had some head coaching experience, albeit not real successful with the Cleveland Browns. He's in his 50s. He's been around the league for a long time. He's respected as a football guy, certainly knows offense, and, you know, checks a lot of the boxes. I don't know that he checks every box, but he checks a lot of the boxes.
Well, he has head coaching experience, which is important. And remember, I go back to John Mara's quote at the press conference. One of the things that he emphasized.
Would be preferred.
Correct. It would be preferred. It doesn't mean that they're going to go in that direction, but he said that it would not hurt if we brought in somebody that had previous head coaching experience. So he gets the check mark there. And what I think gets missed with Pat Shurmur's resume are two things, Paul. One, he was also with the Philadelphia Eagles under Chip Kelly as their OC, and then took over for Kelly, coached against the Giants in Week 17 and beat him.
Oh, I remember.
And got the running game going because that was when DeMarco Murray was still on the team.
Remember it very
and
well.
And they were abandoning the run. The other thing that I wanted to bring up, you mentioned that he had a short tenure with the Cleveland Browns. You have to take into consideration it's Cleveland, which has been a revolving door of head coaches, did not have a great deal of stability. But how about this? When you look at the amount of games that Pat Shurmur won in 2 years, it's a lot more than most other coaches in Cleveland could say. I'm not saying, and maybe, you know what, perhaps we have to put this in perspective, but in all seriousness, I'm bringing up right now for you here. You can see, right. I know the audience can't. This is the log of year-by-year records. I mean, he managed to win 9 games in just 2 seasons in Cleveland. Not many guys can say that they accomplished that feat.
It's a nice point.
Maybe it's a stretch on my
part.
The poor
people of Cleveland, please don't get upset with Lance. He's trying to be nice.
I am trying to be nice. But the point I'm saying is that I know a lot of people, they always look at, well, what has a guy done when he's been a previous head coach? You also need to take into consideration the talent that he was working with, the circumstances of the front office.
Well,
his quarterback was Brandon Whedon and Luke McCoy.
Yeah.
Okay? Let's take that into consideration.
Okay, you want to give him another check mark? He certainly
Colt
knows
McCoy,
the division.
Excuse me, was the quarterback.
Colt McCoy, yes. He certainly knows the division. Being with the Eagles for as long as he was, he knows what it takes to play in the NFC East, the kind of ball you play. Remember, he was with the Eagles only a short time ago, a couple of years back. So it's not like he's totally removed. He knows a lot of the personnel as well. He checks a lot of boxes. Now, what boxes does he not check? Not a winner in terms of postseason experience. What has he been a part of? What Super Bowl teams has he been a part of? None. How many Super Bowls has he been to? None. That's something that I do think carries some cachet. Now, again, how much do you weigh each of the boxes? If you look at the checklist and say there's 8 things the guy has to have, well, you got to put them in certain order.
Yeah.
That's part of it. Then after you put them in order, you have to figure out what percentage are you going to put on each one of the boxes. And so is that critical or not? I don't know. Here's what I do know. When Dan Reeves walked on the campus in 93, everybody's jaw dropped and said, that's Dan Reeves. Turn the team around immediately. Tom Coughlin walked on the campus in 2004. Everybody said, it's Tom Coughlin. Jaws dropped immediately. Changed the culture, changed everything about the team within one season. Now, they didn't win right away, but he did turn things around that within 2 years, they were back in the playoffs. Dan got him back in 1 year. Does Pat Shurmur have that it factor that if he walks onto campus, suddenly everybody in the locker room stops and says, oh, it's Pat Shurmur?
Well, to answer
that's not going to be there, but is that critical?
I mean,
listen, I don't know.
It's a fair question. I was going to say the two guys that you brought up, the thing that they have in common, Reeves and Coughlin, is previous head coaching experience.
Significant and also postseason winning.
Exactly, in terms of Jacksonville and Denver, and I get that.
So the reputation preceded them before they even stepped foot into the building. When you heard that they were coming, everybody took notice. I think Pat Shurmur checks a lot of boxes, but he doesn't check that box. Is that an important box for you? I don't know.
Well, let me ask you this, though. When you say, just for clarification purposes, when you say everybody dropped their jaw or everybody said, oh, that's Tom Coughlin, that's Dan Reeves, are you talking about the court of public opinion, the fans, or are you talking about the players?
The players.
Okay, because my point is
Dan Reeves carried tremendous respect when he walked into the building. So did Tom Coughlin. Everybody knew that when those two guys came onto campus, they meant business. This was going to be a different deal, and this team was going to be built to compete for a championship.
But if players are well-read on what's going on in the National Football League, And remember, there's a lot of guys on this team that are young and do not necessarily know NFL history and where Pat Shurmur's been. But I will tell you this. A lot of football, from a fan's perspective, is what have you done for me lately? More so than what have you done for me 5 years ago.
Right.
Is that a fair sentiment?
Okay.
My point is, if the Vikings beat the Saints and the Vikings continue to do damage in the NFC,
Pat Shurmur's name is going to be a little bit more
and that's my
glossy,
point.
Should
Correct.
We say.
That's my point. So the way we're talking about him now could drastically change
it could.
When you take into consideration the now and what have
it
you done
could.
For me lately. And if I'm a player, if I'm a young quarterback, let me put it that way. If I'm Davis Webb, for example, okay, let's use an actual example here with the Giants. And I see what Pat Shurmur did with Case Keenum. And I'm not saying Case Keenum's a rookie, but Case Keenum was a journeyman. He's been with a few teams.
Sure.
And you notice what a guy like that did for the stock of a quarterback that has not been able to settle down? I would think that you're going to say, you know what? I may not mind working with a guy like that.
The proper word, I think, here is intrigued.
Yeah, well, and you use that term, and I think that is a fair term.
You
because
know.
Because when you look at the other candidates, and I know we're focusing a lot on Pat Shurmur, but he is the latest candidate. Josh McDaniels and Matt Patricia, the fact that they're associated with New England gives them that.
That helps them
Correct.
Check that box.
Exactly.
Now, doesn't help them in that Patricia's never been a head coach.
Correct.
And McDaniels,
short stint with
short
Denver.
Stint and didn't
yes.
go well.
Yeah.
And McDaniels doesn't have the age or experience that a Shurmur has. He's in his 40s.
Correct.
Again, every one of these guys leaves some open boxes on the checklist. Nobody checks them all across the board and fills up every single box.
No, I think those are very valid points. Now, I know there's a lot of reports and rumors that the Giants may look at some other candidates moving forward. What I wanted to bring up, though, because a number of people are wondering, okay, well, you know, now we're entering the second week of January. What do you think the timetable is for the Giants? I went back and I looked. When Ben McAdoo was hired, I was just curious what date that was.
Right. Because
that happened relatively quickly. They hired Ben McAdoo on January 14th.
Correct.
After they parted ways with Tom Coughlin. Now, that doesn't mean we're now at January 8th.
It was within 2 weeks.
It was within about 2 weeks. So I think, I mean, if you're going to look at what happened with the McAdoo process, is it a stretch to say, Paul, that by the end of this week they would probably narrow it down to their top candidate or maybe their top two? Is that a stretch? I'm just throwing that out there based on the timetable and the timeline of what happened with McAdoo.
I think a lot has to do with who is still alive in the playoffs.
True.
And we can't ignore that because, you know, you're talking about a couple of Patriots guys who probably will be alive past this weekend. You're talking about a Vikings guy who's got a real good chance to be alive past this weekend. I mean, that was different in those days. When they hired McAdoo, McAdoo was already in-house as the offensive coordinator, and they didn't have to worry about him being in the playoffs.
Well, and some of the other candidates off the top of my head that they were looking at, I think,
they
weren't
were
necessarily involved in the playoffs.
They were
so,
out.
Correct. That made it easy because if you want a follow-up interview or you want to talk with these guys again just to throw some ideas off of them, the window is very small.
See, Lance, for me, I don't know that the deadline for the head coach is as big a deal as it becomes for his staff. Because every one of these guys who gets interviewed is asked, well, what kind of guy are you thinking about your staff? Who do you think your coordinator might be? Who
important.
Do you think you might want to bring in? And to be honest, folks, and I'm going to tell you this, and a lot of you aren't going to want to hear it, but your head coach is only as good as the staff he puts together. Bill Parcells had a phenomenal staff, okay? Jim Fossil rode the shoulders of his staff to a Super Bowl appearance, okay? Tom Coughlin had a terrific staff, even though it changed a little bit over the years
but
between both Super Bowls.
But there were guys that
he had a number of really good guys. If you have a terrific head coach, but he's not able to put together the staff that he wants and has to settle for his second, third, fourth choices, all of a sudden, maybe it doesn't come together as much as you want it to because he wasn't dealing with the top-level guys that he was trying to get. And it becomes so much more difficult to fill out the staff with your first choices the longer you wait in the process.
Because other apparent candidates are looking elsewhere because they don't want to wait and see what happens with the uncertainty of the market. Case in point, I know there were – I don't think I was on with you last week, but there were rumors circling. I'm not sure if Denver made it official, but Mike Sullivan – oh, they did make it
they
official?
Did.
Okay, I wasn't sure. So there you go. You can't blame from Mike Sullivan's perspective, Paul. He doesn't know what's going to happen with the Giants coaching staff. Denver's calling. They want him to be the quarterback's coach. I mean, you can't blame him for wanting job security.
A bird in the hand is worth two in a bush?
if you want to go with the cliche. No, but that's the point. So to your point,
really,
if you're going to be the head coach, you want to make sure that you have some options, especially if you're torn between one or two guys at specific positions.
This becomes an issue. The longer you wait, it's not just about the head coach. Again, folks, it's also about the staff he's going to want to put together. It is very, very important and often overlooked.
By the way, speaking of that, I'm glad you brought up the fact that Tom Coughlin and Bill Parcells and Jim Fassel lead on their staffs. Two things I wanted to note that were related to the Giants in terms of interest on the coaching front. One, because a lot of through the years, everybody calls for changes to the staff when they're not content with the production of players. Sean Ryan, who is a name that gets overlooked a lot,
sure,
who's the wide receivers coach and the quarterbacks coach, is with the Texans under Bill O'Brien. Quarterbacks coach who did a great job with Deshaun Watson before he got hurt.
Mm-hmm.
He had been considered for a few OC positions as a result of the job he did in Houston. Second example is, this is not a guy that was being considered for head coaching jobs. He's still playing, but what about what Pat Flaherty has done with that Jacksonville offensive line?
Not going to get any arguments from
me. No, and I'm not trying to bring it up to say, oh, let's talk about the offensive line again for the 75th time.
No, but point is that your staff is not just an extension of your head coach, but in some ways those guys can become more important.
Absolutely.
Than your head coach.
Because they're embedded in the room with the players. The coach can only go into so many rooms on a daily basis and interact with everybody.
I can remember when Chris Palmer got hired by the Giants after the 2006 season. Eli Manning had been here 2004, 2005, 2006. There was some doubts as to how good he was going to be. Where was the ceiling? Was Eli truly going to be a superstar? Was he just going to be another good quarterback? Tom Coughlin calls his old buddy Chris Palmer, who he had in Jacksonville. Quarterback guru, has been with so many superstar quarterbacks over the years. He's the guy. He's the guy who makes championship quarterbacks. So I remember talking to Chris. I called him up. The day the news came out, he's going to be the quarterback. I said, Chris, I knew him from his days with the USFL's New Jersey Generals. He was an assistant coach with the Generals. I covered that team back in 85. I said, Chris, congratulations. I said, you just made Eli Manning a Super Bowl champion, right? He goes, nah. I go, don't say. I said, Chris, I know you. I know what you do. I know how you work. I know how good Eli Manning can be. This match is made in heaven. I guarantee you, mark my words, don't ever forget I said this to you on the telephone. You are going to get Eli Manning a Super Bowl sooner rather than later. I promise you this will happen. He's like, well, thanks for putting all the pressure on me. What happened? 2007.
There you go, yeah.
Eli Manning, Super Bowl MVP. Just like that. It matters. Trust me when I tell you, it matters a lot.
And now we have proven that Paul Dottino is a soothsayer on this program.
No, it's just that, yeah. Please, I only tell that to you because it's an example of how critical a staff member can be. Kevin Gilbride was much better suited to be an offensive coordinator to call the plays than he was to be a quarterback's coach. And the mixture was great. Gilbride as coordinator, Palmer as quarterback's coach, and look how well it worked. I mean, it matters a lot. So that's all the reason I bring it up. I could care less about, my association with Palmer. It's all about the fact that a staff member is very, very, very important.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat. Before we open up the lines, I know a lot of people want to discuss a variety of topics. Just real quickly, Paul, in terms of the four playoff games, I know the Giants are not in the playoffs, but to me it's always interesting. What do you learn from what other teams have done to get to the playoffs and what they accomplished in order to move on? And, what did we see over the course of these four games? The Saturday games, what jumped out to me was Tennessee, which went down 21-3, ran the football very effectively in the second half with Derrick Henry. I mean, he was able to pound the football, get a lot of big runs. That was a big difference maker. And Kansas City, what did Kansas City do, Paul? They shied away from the running game. They had a golden opportunity up 21-3 to feed Kareem Hunt, and he only got 11 carries.
But that's Andy Reid.
True. Well, correct. We were talking about that with LeSean McCoy and the Eagles. No doubt about it.
Andy Reid will get you to the playoffs time and time and time again. He'll get you double-digit wins time and time and time again. He's like the Gene Mark of football, okay? You'll get to the playoffs, but don't even think about winning a Super Bowl because it's not going to happen. His game management consistently falls short of the mark. Look at how many of his teams have underachieved once they've gotten into the postseason. Lost games they should have won because he mismanaged philosophically on game day they should have been able to do. Now, look, every team has blown playoff games. Giants have had a couple themselves, San Francisco and Minnesota over the years. Every team has those. But his track record, just ask the people in Philadelphia.
Seems to be a trend.
How many of his playoff teams underachieved because he made game day decisions that were just head scratchers? That's, you know, I even saw something on the web that said this week, and I don't know if it was because it was sourced or because it was speculation, that he actually could have some difficulties keeping that job because the people in Kansas City were so underwhelmed by the job that he had.
I'd find
again,
that hard to believe.
I don't think so either.
Yeah.
A team like Kansas City, they finally got themselves a home playoff game. Yeah. They should be thrilled.
Well, and they've been consistent. I mean, they're always in the mix to win the division title.
But that's the way it is.
Yeah.
But know that. With Andy Reid, that's what you get.
No, and I'm not disagreeing
with you.
You'll
be a playoff team. You won't be a champion.
But here's my argument. If I'm people that are criticizing Andy Reid, Marvin Lewis got a two-year extension. And my argument is Marvin Lewis provides stability. Now, we can get into the postseason, the lack of success. But the point is your team is in contention. There's stability there. Andy Reid at least provides that stability.
Remember when Lovie Smith got fired off a 10-win season a couple of years ago?
I remember that in Chicago. Yeah.
I mean, you know, it happens.
It does. No, you're 100% right with respect to that. But that, to me, would be far-fetched
anyway,
if they're going to part ways with him. But there has been a trend with the Kansas City Chiefs. Jacksonville leaned on what got them to the postseason. Their defense did a heck of a job. I understand it was only Tyrod Taylor and a Bills offense that has struggled. But they also were able to pound the football late in the game with Blake Bortles and Leonard Fournette. It'll be very interesting to see whether or not they can repeat their success in beating Pittsburgh earlier this season. They beat the Steelers 30-9, which was an impressive victory.
Mm-hmm.
But Blake Bortles and that offense is going to have to produce more against Ben Roethlisberger and company, because you know the Steelers are at least going to be able to put up more than 9 points, I figure, against that Jacksonville defense.
Yeah, I would be shocked if Jacksonville was able to pull off that upset. I really would.
Well, defense travels well. That's the only reason why I feel good. You know, everybody's pointing to, oh, it's Blake Bortles, the lack of experience, and I get that. You have a defense, you're going to give yourself a chance. Doesn't mean you're a lock to win, but you're going to at least say, we could go into Pittsburgh, we could keep the game perhaps within striking distance, and then you hope Blake Bortles and Leonard Fournette can make some plays. So, you know, that's at least the challenge that Jacksonville is looking at. And I think in the NFC, you have Atlanta, Philadelphia, and you have Minnesota, New Orleans. I mentioned Minnesota, New Orleans is a repeat from week one. Philadelphia right now, this is a dangerous Atlanta team. How many times do we talk about, Paul, team that gets in at the wild card,
mm-hmm.
right, starts playing good football week 15, week 16, and then rides that momentum. The Giants fit that bill. The Steelers fit that bill. The Packers fit that bill. In years they've won the Super Bowl. This is not a team that I'm too excited about coming into Philadelphia.
No, I'm not. I'm not picking the Eagles this
week. Well,
weekend.
I know I don't have to convince you. You're the wrong person to ask anyway.
I'm not picking the Eagles.
I should have thought twice.
There's
before
no way I'm
that.
Picking
yeah.
the Eagles this weekend.
Well, listen. Atlanta's been a little Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. So let's not make it sound like the Falcons are the juggernaut that made the Super Bowl last year.
I'm not a big Falcons fan either.
But
however. The experience that they had last year will serve them well right now.
No, I'll give you that. And all of those guys come back with knowing what it's like to win postseason games. I don't think that's the end-all, be-all
factor.
And boy,
does it stink to lose the big one.
Of course. So you figure that fed into them. But, I mean, Atlanta did have a big game against the Saints a few weeks ago, and they laid an egg in that game, and that gave an opportunity for the Saints to win the division. So they've been in situations where they had a lot on the line late in the season. I don't know necessarily if that's automatically going to translate to the playoffs, but knowing how Philadelphia is coming off a bye week, offense has been a little erratic over the last few weeks. Atlanta, big win against the Rams. It's a dangerous team.
There is a head coach hiring.
Correct.
The Chiefs... former OC Matt Nagy, now hired as the Chicago Bears head coach.
So that's
which
one
means,
domino.
And he will be putting a staff together momentarily. So that means a bunch of assistants are going to be coming out of the pool as of hour from now.
And here's another way to look at it. We were just talking about Andy Reid. Now, Andy Reid has a void to fill at the offensive coordinator position. So if somebody doesn't get a head coaching gig, he may be looking at somebody there. Dominoes are going to start to fall. All it takes is, you know, Paul, one head coaching hiring, and then the level of urgency for the other teams steps it up a notch.
It becomes a dance of musical chairs, and none of the guys, whether they're head coach candidates or assistant coach candidates, want to be left standing at the end of the music.
With that being said, let's open up the phone lines. We've talked a lot. Now we want to hear from you. 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. Tony's in D.C. He gets us going. What's happening, Tony?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for making it, Tony.
Hi.
Got two things. First, as far as the draft with the GM, in his interview, he didn't really insinuate what he would do, of course, but he did say that he moves up and moves back based on whether or not there is value where he is currently drafting. So I'm not saying he won't trade back to garner picks, but I think that's kind of a rare thing that GMs do. And Gettleman, I mean, he might do that, but it seems like if he feels there's a pick worthy of the number two pick, he's going to pick that player.
Well, let me, in the interest of accuracy, I'm going to let you finish, but in the interest of accuracy, Gettleman made 10 draft pick centered moves or trades while he was the GM in Carolina. Five of those times, he moved up. He never moved down. Just for the interest of facts and giving you the information as it was laid out in Carolina.
And he's also made deals, just to add, I'll let you continue, Tony. What I wanted to add to Paul's point, because I wrote about this on Giants.com in one of our fact or fiction pieces. Remember, he was the one that orchestrated also the John Beeson deal with Jerry Reese. People forget about that. He was the Panthers' general manager. So we've also seen him.
Well, that was a player for a pick.
That was a player. But my point is, listen, you could also trade a player and get some type of a draft pick in return before the draft starts.
Sure,
so he's been aggressive on both fronts.
Well,
I don't think it's necessarily just been draft day.
10 deals over the course of 4 years with the Panthers. And
yeah.
By today's standards, that's a lot.
It is.
Go ahead.
Go ahead, Tony.
I don't doubt he's a wheeler and dealer. I'm just saying I don't know if he'll pass on talent to move back and garner picks. I'm not saying he will. I'm not saying he won't. I'm just not sure about that. You know, if he feels that there's a player worthy of the number two pick, he's going to take him, whatever the position. But here's my question for you guys and definitely for all the people that call in. I just am not understanding why people would use a top five, let's say top five pick on a running back. I just, in no way, even though Barkley is phenomenal, he is everything everyone says he is, I just do not see how anyone can see value in a top five pick on a running back. And here's some simple, and just some simple ways to think about it. You look at the best backs in the league, they're all mid-round picks. I mean, the reality is that running backs are cheap, they're easy to train up, and they're easy to replace.
All right, here's what I'm going to say to you, and I agree with you philosophically speaking. I don't think you should necessarily think running back that high. I agree with that philosophy 99% of the time, and I'm really kind of stuck on that. I just don't think it's a great idea. However, if you want to go to the other side of the argument, the Jaguars drafted Fournette number 4 overall.
Yeah.
And that power running game is a big reason why they're in the playoffs right now.
But they also addressed the offensive line.
Well, they did.
I think you can't dismiss that.
Well, and that's the thing.
It was synonymous with one another.
That's the thing that I would say to you. I could see, even though I'm usually against taking a running back, especially that high in the first round, I'm usually against that. The only way I could see a Barkley making sense is he is such a dynamic player.
I agree with
you.
He
is such a playmaker. He's not just going to be lining up standard halfback on every play.
Yeah.
He's going to be playing multiple positions. And in addition to that, if you tell me that Gettleman's going to address the offensive line in free agency, or he's got another plan where he's going to get other guys to bolster that line, well, then maybe that's not a bad pick to take Barkley. Because if you take Barkley without fixing the O-line, you wasted your pick because Jim Brown's not going to run if there's no room.
Yeah, it's just like Ezekiel Elliott when he was taken. He's another example, like
yes.
Leonard Fournette. He's going into a situation where there's a stable offensive line.
Right. So let me just say that while I agree in principle, and I've said it many times on this show, and you know I have, I'm against taking a first-round running back. There could be an exception there, and Barkley would be one of those guys that might fit the exception if there was a second part to Gettleman's plan, whether it's in free agency or trades. He's got to get better offensive linemen to make maximum use out of Barkley. Otherwise, you wasted it.
Yeah, your house has to be in order for you to feel good that guy's going to make an immediate impact. I'm with both of you. I think philosophically, I'm not in favor of drafting a running back that high, but I think Barkley's a unique running back. And I'll give you another example. If we redid the 2017 NFL draft, and this relates to your point, Tony, I guarantee you if you're a GM, Tony, you're going to reconsider where Alvin Kamara was drafted. Okay. You're probably, if you're
and
a
Kareem
team,
Hunt.
Well, Kareem Hunt, to me, is not as versatile as Alvin Kamara. Kamara is the type of running back that can catch the ball out of the backfield, can run off the edge. You can move him around, to Paul's point about Barkley, that even if your offensive line is not necessarily in order, he can make something out of nothing. And that's why if I'm drafting again now and redoing 2017, I'm not waiting until the third round to draft Alvin Kamara.
You know, I remember going into the draft, the knock on Kamara, and I remember saying that he's a poor man's McCaffrey. That's what's going to happen. He's going to be a poor man's McCaffrey. But here's the thing. Both of those guys got into the playoffs because they were incredibly dynamic. And without them, their respective teams probably don't make the playoffs or at least have a harder time doing so. So they were difference makers. But here's the key. Both of those teams found ways to use them and gave them the proper tools and space. There was enough of blocking with the Saints, enough of blocking with the Panthers, that those guys had room to operate to be dynamic. If the lines weren't good enough, and if the strategy and the scheme wasn't good enough to get those guys the open areas to do their business, they wouldn't have been dancing all over defenses like they were. So it's got to be a good fit. You know, Barkley could be a good fit for the Giants if they've got the proper picket fence in front of them. Anyway,
well,
go ahead.
2 points, and I'll let you guys go because I may get other callers. The first point is I hated the Ezekiel Elliott and the Leonard Fournette pick. Here's why. They were great players, but Jacksonville passed on Deshaun Watson for a running back, and I bet and he would have did a heck of a lot more than Blake Bortles. And the Cowboys passed on Jalen Ramsey, who's going to be a perennial all-pro for a running back that's playing behind one of the best offensive lines in football. So I thought they were bad picks from those two teams. But my last point, and then I'll move on, it's about value. There's a reason why Olivier Vernon makes $80 million, has an $80 million contract with one all-pro season.
Right.
And while Le'Veon Bell had to hold out, and he has multiple Pro Bowls and multiple all-pro seasons. Because they're not seen as valuable.
Well,
I hate to say this, it's unsexy, but Bradley Chubb would be a smarter pick than Saquon Barkley.
I
love you guys.
I totally understand, because remember, football 101, old school football, says besides the quarterback, there are four core positions that are the most valuable that you have to have if you're going to build a foundation for a winner. So I want to acknowledge you, caller, on this one. You've got to have your left tackle. You've got to have your cover cornerback, okay? You've got to have your edge rushing
pass rusher,
okay. And obviously, you've got to have your QB, as we talked about. So those are the guys you got to have. Those guys, and so I get it. Running back is not one of your core four. I get it. So, you know, but in certain situations, maybe.
Well, to me, I think it goes a step further as to why I would not invest a lot of money in a running back, besides your point about the core four, and I agree with you there. It's the fact that the running back, unlike any other position, Paul, is the most injury-prone position in the National Football League because they get so hit constantly during the course of a game, especially if you're a 20-carry back. Case in point, we were talking about the Vikings earlier, Paul, okay? Dalvin Cook goes down in week two. Did the Vikings running game suffer? And this is no disrespect to Dalvin Cook. But the point is, they had Latavius Murray.
Sure.
They had Jerick McKinnon. They had a good old line. Pat Shurmur's got a good philosophy. They found guys that could plug in. The Packers. I know the Packers didn't make the playoffs. Green Bay must have went through about three or four running backs this season.
It hurt Dallas, though. When Elliott was out, it definitely hurt.
It hurt, but it hurt Dallas. They were able to run the football.
To some degree.
Because Alfred Morris, if you look at the numbers, and Rod Smith.
I get it.
They were able.
It wasn't the same dynamic. Dak was not the same quarterback when Elliott was out.
And here's why. Because to me, the receiving core did not step up enough to make now the attention come off of the running game. Because now what defense has said is, well, we're not scared of Dez and Cole Beasley and Terrence Williams consistently making plays this season. I don't think they did enough of that as we've seen in previous years. So I think it changed the dynamics of a defense and how they went against the Cowboys offense. I think it's easy to say, oh, no Ezekiel Elliott, look at what happened to the Cowboys offense. But there was more to it than just the removal of Ezekiel Elliott. It, to me, was the receiving core not making enough plays consistently.
Anyway, bottom line is Barkley is a dynamic talent. Somebody is going to be very happy to have him. I just hope that they have the proper scheme and the proper bodies around him to make full use of his talent, because otherwise it's not going to work out very well.
I agree. And I think Tony brought up a number of fair points. I mean, I'm with him. If you go back and look at that draft, I remember when we were speculating, I thought Jalen Ramsey would have been a perfect fit for the Cowboys. I mean, they need help in the secondary,
no doubt.
A guy you could build around. If you could go back, I think that's a fair point. Jacksonville could have went in a few different directions. If you pass on the running back, I think there's a way to regroup and get the talent a little bit later on, as long as the coaches know how to use the running back and your house is in order, which is what we laid out for a variety of teams.
Yep.
Let's head back to the lines. Kenny's in Jersey. Kenny, what's happening?
Hey, Paul. How are you guys doing?
Hi.
Doing well, Kenny.
Taking my call.
You got it. What do you got for us?
I was going to call earlier, but, things happen. I like Dave Gettleman. The thing about him that I like is how the team played the game after he was hired. The team ran the football. The team played good defense. And I think that has a lot to do with his press conference. He put the word out there, I want to play good defense. I want to run the ball. I want to fix the offensive
and
line.
I'm going to kick butt, although he used a different word.
Yes, right? And I think that's a good thing. I think that's a good thing. That helps me put trust in him. Now, with that said, I like Davis Webb. I like his personality. I like the way he carries himself. He seems very classy, like a young Eli Manning. But I haven't seen him play, okay? I didn't watch the preseason games as much as I probably should have last year. I didn't see him play.
Work with in those preseason games anyway, so don't necessarily think that that's the best litmus test of what he can do.
Yeah. All right. Well, I watched some highlight film on Rosen and Darnold. And just from the eye test of, almost 33 years of watching football, I think Rosen throws a better ball from what I've seen. I think he throws a more pure pass. He's able to move around in the pocket. He's tall. He's strong. He can run if he needs to. He seems like he throws a better ball. I don't like how Darnold drops his elbows before he throws a pass. Maybe that's just me.
You know who's got the best skill set of the quarterbacks? Josh Allen. Take a look at his video.
I will.
He's got the best. If you strictly want skill set from the quarterback position coming out of this draft, to me, Josh Allen is the pro prototype. Far more better skill set all around than the rest of these guys that people are talking about. But I wouldn't take him either.
I also like a few guys that I think could fall further down in the first round. I think Baker Mayfield and Lamar Jackson have some value too, depending on how a coaching staff can utilize them. I wouldn't overlook and dismiss those guys so fast as well.
Yeah. Now, on to the coaching staff. Now, whether we draft a quarterback this year, whether we draft a quarterback next year, we have Davis Webb on the roster. Whoever comes in, I don't care if it's a defensive-minded head coach. Let's say we hire Matt Patricia. His offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach, to me, it's important that they have experience, grooming a quarterback. Because, let's be honest, 3 years down the road, Eli Manning's not going to be a New York Giant. He's just not. I don't think at 40 he's going to be playing football. Call me crazy, but I don't think he's Tom Brady. Let's put it that way. I love Eli Manning, but to be honest, I don't think he's going to be playing 3 years from now. So within that span, hopefully we still have the same head coach, same offensive coordinator and all that, and hopefully we know what we got at quarterback. As far as Barkley, hey, whether we draft a quarterback or a running back, if we don't fix that line, they're both going to struggle.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks a lot for taking my call, guys.
All right, Kenny. Appreciate the phone call.
Sure thing.
I'll take it a step further for what Kenny said. Whether you have an offensive-minded head coach or a defensive-minded head coach, Paul, the OC and the quarterback coach is still important. It doesn't matter what the philosophy of the head coach is. I mean, look at the Eagles, for example. Doug Peterson, they brought in as head coach. He hired Frank Reich as his offensive coordinator, former quarterback, by the way, and then he brought in John DeFilippo as his quarterback's coach, who, by the way, was a former offensive coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
So think about all that experience that you have on the offensive side of your staff grooming Carson Wentz. That's what I would want, whether it's a defensive-minded coach or an offensive-minded coach. It makes no difference.
Yeah, no, there's no question. And that's why, for me, if Shurmur winds up being the guy out of the four that we've got confirmed as candidates, you certainly could see him checking the box for Davis Webb, because this is a guy who's going to want to not only ride Eli Manning into the sunset for whatever he's got left, he's certainly going to have a great time grooming a young quarterback who has a tremendous amount of potential. And by the way, for all the people who want to take a quarterback at number two and want to just pass over Davis Webb and throw him in a trash bin somewhere because they haven't seen him. I just want to know, what has Davis Webb done to invoke so many people wanting to get rid of him and bypass him and step over him and treat him as if he's just a piece of scrap paper on the floor? What has he done to deserve that type of treatment from the fans?
I'll tell you what. I don't think it's him doing anything or not doing
anything.
That's
the point.
No, it's
about nothing.
It's about the fact that every time we have a draft, it's the next best thing that's out there. You know, you go to the store, you already have 17 jackets, but now you see a new 18th jacket on the rack. That's not going to prevent you from wanting to purchase the 18th jacket. So now you have this crop of quarterbacks who are at the top programs in college football. You forget that somebody is internally here.
Yeah.
So I think that's what it's more about.
And because he is the unknown and did not get a chance to play, people automatically are fearful and think negatively of him. And that's not fair to him, nor is it fair to him to bunch him in with the Ryan Nassibs of the world or the Brett Bomars of the world of years past, who the Giants did draft in other drafts, thinking that they might be the next guy or the solid backup or whoever it was, and they did not work out. But it's not fair to Davis Webb to put him into that shopping cart and say, oh, he's not going to be anything. It's laughable. People who have never stepped foot in this facility or seen Davis Webb on a practice field are the ones who are most vocal about how the Giants need to take a quarterback at number two. That's wrong, and it's unfair.
As I said multiple times on this program, and a few of the callers have echoed the sentiments, Paul, until we see what Dave Gettleman's draft profile of Davis Webb looked like, it's very hard to know for sure what the philosophy of this organization is going to be moving forward with
Davis
Webb.
And that is true. That is true.
Because you know why? I bet you a number of fans are skeptical for this very reason. Davis Webb was not drafted by Dave Gettleman. And you mentioned a few of the other quarterbacks. Now, Davis Webb was drafted a little bit higher. Ryan Nassib, they moved up for. We're talking third round versus fourth round. But they're looking at, well, the previous regime brought those guys in. They didn't necessarily pan out. So why should they have faith in Davis Webb? That I'm sure, is part of the philosophy that plays a role in the doubt. But once again, for all we know, Dave Gettleman may have had very high grades on Davis Webb. We just don't know at this point.
We don't.
I would love to know what Dave Gettleman thought of Eli Apple coming out of the draft, too.
Now,
here's
what we do know, okay? Dave Gettleman was the Carolina Panthers GM in this spring's draft, 2017.
Correct, because he parted ways with the team in the summer.
Okay.
So he did go through the entire 2017 draft.
He had Cam Newton, who is a young, in his prime quarterback, so there's no reason to be drafting a quarterback high if you're Dave Gettleman at that point. So that would be one argument against taking a Davis Webb.
Meaning they didn't have a need for a quarterback.
Correct.
Is essentially. And Derek Anderson's their backup.
Derek Anderson's
more
backup.
Than a solid backup.
So why would he even think about taking a quarterback? So don't say because Dave Gettleman did not draft him with Carolina that he did not like him. That would be a wrong assumption, okay? But here's what I will say. Undoubtedly, in his draft room, he's got a file or had a file in Carolina on Davis Webb. He had to, because they look at all the prospects who go to the combine.
And they follow up on them once they get into the NFL.
Of course they do. So we don't have access to that file. I don't know what it is, but don't automatically assume because he didn't draft Davis Webb that he didn't like him. That would be wrong. In fact, I would say I would have been shocked if he drafted him because of the quarterback situation he had coming off of the 2016 season. Maybe, we don't know this, maybe Dave Gettleman actually thought that Davis Webb was a top-notch prospect. Maybe he thought he was as good as some of those first-rounders who were taken in the spring. But because he had no need for him, what's the point even talking about it?
Well, here's the only thing that you could read into.
We don't know that.
The only thing you could read into since Dave Gettleman has been general manager with respect to the quarterback position is this. At his introductory presser, he, and I'm paraphrasing because I don't have the exact statement in front of me, but he said something, you can never have enough competition and enough depth at a position.
That is true.
So that would mean to me that if the Giants go out and they use the number two overall pick on a quarterback, I would not be surprised because it falls in line with his philosophy. You have Eli Manning on the roster. You have Davis Webb on the roster. You go out, you bring in a third quarterback. Well, he just said you can never have enough at one position for the sake of competition.
Just remember, he also said you build with the hog mollies.
He did say that too. Yes. But that could mean through. But here's the thing. We may have that answered before the draft because he could go out and pursue those hogs in free agency.
Well, this is why, for me, it's kind of, as much as I feel as I do logically as to how the Giants should proceed, this could all change once free agency opens up in March and we start seeing the maneuvers that Dave Gettleman makes. Because much like the old school GMs of years past, Ernie Accorsi and specifically George Young, and I know Gettleman was not here for George Young, but he knows a lot of George's philosophies. And he said this quote the other day on one of the interviews, and it was a great quote because it's true. I learned this many years ago. Never go into the draft saying we must get a blank. You never want to be desperate, absolutely desperate beyond belief, to get a certain position in the draft, because it will affect your board. It will affect your emotions. It will affect your picking. And in all likelihood, will make it go astray from the plan and the system that you have in place that was designed to help you win. That's a bad idea. So if Dave Gettleman can follow his own advice and try to get as many things fixed as possible before the draft, through free agency, maybe getting some bargain basement guys, like when he told the Giants to sign Sean O'Hara, when he told the Giants years ago to sign Antonio Pierce. He filled big needs for the Giants by telling Ernie Accorsi to go get those guys. Maybe, just maybe, that will change the Giants' entire draft strategy if they can plug somebody to those spots.
No, listen, free agency comes before the draft in the National Football League,
big
unlike
deal.
Other leagues. So
big deal,
we've
man.
Got to get through that. I mean, we can sit here and speculate all we want in terms of where you go with the number 2 overall pick. The team's going to look different by the time free agency finishes up, because you're going to at least got to have some changes to the roster. Let's head back to the lines. Antonio's in Manhattan. Antonio, welcome aboard. What do you got for us?
Hey, what's going on, Lance?
Hi.
Paul, how are you guys doing today?
Doing well, Antonio. So what's on your mind?
So I just want to talk about two things. I want to talk about, first and foremost, the head coach of the Giants. I think that philosophy in terms of offense or defensive coordinator and what they're going to bring to the table is not going to be the most important thing. I think that we need somebody who pretty much is strict and is also a player's coach, too. And believe it or not, I think that the last coach that we had that fit that role was Tom Coughlin. Now, Tom Coughlin came in as a strict coach, but then he changed. He became a player's coach, and he was a strict player's coach, and I think that's what we need again. And that's as far as, you know, my opinion on that. What do you guys think about that?
Well, the problem is Tom Coughlin is now president of the Jaguars, and the 2004 edition or 2007 edition of Tom Coughlin, if you will, is not available right now. But I agree with you. That's the guy I'd love to see walk into the building. That addition of that guy is what the Giants need right now. I don't know that particular prototype exists. Do you?
Well, I think that, I mean, we don't know, because we're not sitting on interviews and we're not the one to ask
that's
the
true.
Question. So it could be out there. And I mean, that's my point of view on that. Now, in terms of the draft, two things. I think that if we're not getting nobody trying to move up in the draft, we got to take the best player that's available. And if it is the quarterback, we got to take the quarterback, even though I don't think we need a quarterback. Our ideal situation would be to trade down. I really would want to see us trade down, get a linebacker, and get an offense. Get a lineman, no matter how the order, if it's the lineman first or the linebacker second. I think that's the best thing to do right now. And the draft, and seeing how Gettleman drafts, that's going to determine what is he looking for. Is he looking for to win right now, or is he going to win, or is he looking to win in the next, you know, 3 or 4 years?
I'm not so sure
and
about
in
that,
my opinion,
though. I wouldn't make that big of an assumption that just because you see what positions he goes after in year one means that he doesn't have long-term plans that he's taking
into
consideration.
Let's remember two things. John Mara said, I expect the Giants to be good in 2018. So he is expecting a quick turnaround. And remember, Jacksonville won 3 games last year. This year they won 10.
Right.
And they made it to the second round of the playoffs. So the dramatic turnaround is not impossible if you make the right moves.
It's not. Yeah,
so
no.
So that's
absolutely
important to remember.
But what
second
what I'm
thing
saying,
to remember is the Giants, the bulk of the roster, because of the economics of the contracts and the age of a lot of the guys, they got a 1 or 2 year window left.
They got to win now.
I'm with
Absolutely.
You. I'm
they
with you.
Win now.
Yeah, but I don't think you can be thinking
think
5 years from now.
No,
I don't think
later.
So.
But my point is when you draft players, you don't just say, well, this guy is going to give me maximum effort for 2 years and then he's going to help this team win. You want a player that's going to thrive for perhaps long term.
Yeah,
is
but
my
you
point.
You want a guy who's going to be able to give you some
now.
Immediate production.
No,
that's
doubt.
The key.
No, but
yeah.
I don't think that necessarily that philosophy changes dramatically whether or not you have high hopes for your team or low hopes for your team. You still want a guy to come in, especially if you're drafting him in the first round. You want him to make an immediate contribution. That's the whole point why you took him.
Yeah,
in
but
the first
I
round.
I
if
think
you pick a quarterback, he's not going to contribute right
correct.
Away. We know
correct.
That already.
Yeah, but some teams are also of the philosophy that Dave Gettleman can feel Eli Manning's still playing at a high level. We can win with him. And at the same time, I could also have a successor perhaps in place so that when he's done in 2 or 3 years, we're also in good shape.
I appreciate the patience here. I got to get this young whippersnapper into shape.
You could disagree with me all you want.
Here's the thing.
Yeah.
You're right. First-round draft picks, you want to get immediate production out of them, especially if you're drafted highly. But here's the thing.
If you're competing.
If you're still competing to win now, you want immediate production out of your second, third, and maybe fourth rounders too.
Yeah, but
that's where it makes a bigger difference.
Because if I'm
drafting in the third round this year, right, and there's an offensive lineman there who has a chance to compete for a starting job in the fall – I got a much
that's
better
a
chance of taking that guy than I do taking an extra defensive back or a wide receiver.
Well,
that does make a difference.
Well, maybe that changes to me more of the later rounds, but to say that Cleveland did not expect Myles Garrett to come in year one.
Of course not.
That's my point.
The call was talking about second, third, fourth rounds, which are guys who are going to need to give them immediate production.
Yeah, but
it does change how you look at them.
But also young teams are of the philosophy that if we have another young class coming in, we hope that they can add to the youth that we already have and constantly
not the way the Giants are built.
Giants got to
do something quickly, and that's what John Mara wants. He said this team's going to be good next
year.
They
do, but I think that there's enough examples in the National Football League that every time we see a team that wins 2 or 3 games 1 year, it's not just necessarily banking on the entire draft class coming in and revamping the team. It's a lot of things that go into changing the outlook of the team.
To be a big
correct,
part of
and
that.
That's my point. So that's why the whole premise of the point was that we see what Dave Gettleman does in this draft is going to be an indication of what he thinks is the outlook of this year's team. And I'm saying I disagree with that. I don't think his decision making the draft alone is going to dictate his outlook of this team.
The combo of free agency and the
a
draft
lot of
will
factors,
definitely tell us.
A lot of factors, correct.
Go
not
ahead,
one.
Sir. I'm sorry. I'm just trying to help you out with this guy.
Listen, we could go back and forth all day. I'm here.
One last thing that I want to point out is, this is the question I'm going to have to you guys, and I'll answer it too, and then I'll take it off the line when you get all your answers off the phone. If you guys were given the option of, hey, you guys are going to compete for a Super Bowl next year, might even possibly win it, but then the next 3 or 4 years, you might be a mediocre team.
Sign me up right now.
Based on the draft.
Sign me up right now.
That's all. I have a good one, guys.
All right,
take care.
Appreciate the phone call. I still think when you draft, you still have to have a big picture perspective. You can't just draft for 1 year.
Here's the problem. In this game, you can't tell what's going to happen 2, 3, 4 years down the line. The game is too volatile. It's full of too much mediocrity. If you have any chance or any belief that you can get within reach and grab something now, you got to go for it. You've got to.
Well, but that all goes back to because you have faith in the talent. You're not just going to reach for a guy whether or not your team is in position to win or not. You have to still go back to having faith in the talent. That's look at some of the teams.
No doubt.
If we go back, Paul, and you look at the playoff field right now, okay? And if I would have said that the Saints would have had one of the best defenses in the National Football League this season, which they did, you know, I don't think a lot of people felt that way when they just looked at this roster on paper. And the point is, through some of their drafting and through some of their free agent moves, it turned around quickly.
But you know what? Like the 2007 Giants, they're not going to the Super Bowl if they don't get a tremendous amount of production out of that rookie class.
And I agree with you. That was a huge difference maker.
It was a huge. Without it, they're not going.
But at the same time.
And what happened after that? They didn't get back until 2011. So, you know.
Well, because of injuries to some of members of that 07 class.
But that's what happens in this game. This game is so full of mediocrity. It's so full of question marks. You
that's
can't
why,
really know what's going to happen in 2 or 3 years.
Which
you got a shot now. Get it.
which is also why you still go to guys that have a tremendous amount of upside and talent, regardless of where your team stands.
We're running out of time.
Yeah, let's head back to the phone line. Shakes is in Baltimore. Shakes, what's happening? How we doing, Shakes?
What's going on, fellas?
Hey, man. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to y'all, too, man. Oh, man, I say the best for last, huh?
Well, no, we got a few more guys after you, so don't crown yourself this early. Yeah.
I see it's 12:57.
Go ahead,
so
Shakes.
I'm like, oh, man.
So what do you got?
Y'all going to give me some short time here, but all right. So I got a few things, right? So first off, the caller just said something about a player's coach and being tough, like Coughlin. I think the guy that fits that bill is Schwartz. And the reason why is because I think he's hard-nosed, tough already. I think that's just him and his persona. But at this, when I go back into when he was interim for the Buffalo Bills and they carried him off the field when he won that one game, to me, if he's not a player's coach, the players don't do that. So I think that guy fits the bill most. Not saying that that's my guy, but if Schwartz is the guy, I would be happy.
Well, just keep in mind, Jakes, he was the defensive coordinator of that team.
Correct.
The reason why he was
halted
off on the shoulders, I think, of the players was because he was going up against his former team, the Lions,
who
he previously coached.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that was more of a reason why they did it.
Shakes, just to be devil's advocate, and I'm not going to get into a huge debate with you on this because I don't know the man well enough to get into one, but the 110 win season he had with the Lions and made the playoffs, and his, you know, it was down. He had that 1 year, and then they went right back down. You could make an argument that he underachieved in his 5 years there.
Yeah.
Does that check a box for you?
A lot of guys underachieved in their first or whatever stint.
I know. But that's why there's no perfect candidate for this job, to be honest with you.
Absolutely. Number two, I like Gettleman. I like Gettleman. He wasn't my natural choice. I wanted Pioli. I can say this. I wanted Pioli, but I like Gettleman. And the reason why I like Gettleman is because he values linebackers, and he's a former offensive lineman. So he's going to want to grab those guys. Like, they had a lot of linebackers in Carolina, and I remember that 1 year. I was huge on Shaq Thompson. And they still drafted Shaq Thompson.
Yes, you're absolutely right about that, Shakes.
Yeah, Gettleman drafted.
He was a Shaq Thompson guy.
Yes. So, you know, that's why I like Gettleman. I think that he's going to buy you linebackers. I think he's going to buy you offensive linemen and running backs. So, gets me to this point. First off, Gettleman is not opposed to going running back in the first round. I know it wasn't number two overall, but he just chose Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah, he was number
eight. Christian McCaffrey could do everything. And that's what Saquon Barkley can do for you.
Yeah.
Brings me to my next point. Barkley pick. I am #BarkleyOrBust campaign. I am the president of Barkley or Bust. And I'm going to tell you why. Now, it is a given fact that these two things go together. When you grab a Barkley, you must have an offensive line for him to run behind. You must.
Absolutely, and Shakes.
To me, to run in the league, I look at teams of the past, like the old Jets or the old Seahawks with Sean Alexander running behind it, right? And I remember Hutchinson.
Steve Hutchinson.
He was Steve Hutchinson. He was the main factor of why they was running the ball the way they was running the ball. It was other tackles and other things in Seattle, too. But Steve Hutchinson was the man, and that guy was a guard. To me, I think that you go and grab the guards. After you grab Barkley, go for the guards, and the guards can be had in the second and third round. So if you go in the third round, grab up a guard, I think it'll be paying dividends for a Barkley pick. Now,
well, you know what, Shakes, before you go, though, seriously, they might be able to get somebody in free agency, too. We don't know how that's going to shake down.
Yeah.
But so far, we are 3-for-3 here. I'm okay with Barkley, provided the offensive line is fortified. Otherwise, you would have to agree it's not a good move.
It makes no sense.
It makes no sense at all.
It makes no sense.
Yeah.
It makes no sense.
Agreed.
Okay? You don't take a running back of that special caliber and say, go ahead and run behind Joe Smoke, okay?
Right, exactly.
You know, you just don't do those things. If you're going to grab up a guy like that, especially number two overall, that means you have to build somewhat your team around that guy.
You know what that's like, Jakes? That's like ordering a pizza and then finding out you don't have any cheese to put on it.
Absolutely. You just got sauce. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Leave it to another food analogy, but yeah.
So, you know, that's why I feel like you go grab those guards and it can be had and it can be done in this draft and in this off season, and you can build around. And that will not only help us as far as defensive-wise, it will help Eli Manning in his final two seasons, to go ahead and possibly give us another Super Bowl. And this is what we all in here for, right? This is what we all want.
Shakes, we are so much in agreement on this phone call. Have you and I ever agreed this much before? I mean, really? This much?
I don't know, P-Dot, but I'm on a roll. Let me go. So,
we got one more, because we got another call we want to squeeze in.
Real quick, my last point, though. The last time he was number two taken
Lawrence Taylor,
in
yes.
a draft, in a draft, it was LT.
Yeah.
Yes.
LT, y'all.
I know.
No,
but
this
that...
is for the people that sitting there saying, oh, don't take a running back and all that. It was LT. Now, I get it. You can have running backs in the third, fourth round. We've seen it all in all these drafts. But if you got an opportunity to grab up somebody special, somebody as special as Saquon Barkley, please do not pass that up. Please do not pass that up. You have to take the special player. I don't care what position it is. If he's the special player and you are smack dab right in the position to take him, please do not pass up on him.
All right, Jakes.
Thanks for taking
you
my
got
call,
it.
Y'all.
Be good, Jakes.
All right, let's
take
try
care.
To squeeze in Coach Marvin in Delaware. Coach Marvin, what's happening?
How you doing, Marvin?
How you doing, guys?
All right.
How you doing? All right, how you doing, Lance?
I'm doing all right. What do you got for us?
The last caller, he did, you know, I had this call last week with David Beal, the Barkley case. I talked to Paul a few weeks ago that I'm willing to trade the pick and willing to get more picks and have that number one next year so you have two. But after watching Barkley and looking at the list of college players, Barkley's the best player on that board. And if you got an opportunity to get him, I'm looking at the Giants maybe addressing the line in free agency. I said this last week, and I just heard it today. And you can draft your way back and save your way back into the first round and get someone on that offensive line to make some movement there. You can justify the pick of Barkley in the second round.
Yeah, I'm with you, Marvin. I'm with you because my feeling has always been to trade the pick, but I'm opening the door to taking Barkley, provided that the O-line is addressed. So let's see what happens in free agency first, because that will help me lean a certain way. Again, I'm not going to be totally closed on it, but it's going to help me lean. If they get some offensive linemen in free agency, I'd be much more willing to go Barkley, no question about it.
And that's why we got to see how free agency plays out before we start to speculate even more about the draft.
I agree with that. My chief is Rod Erkrich here for the United States Government, Department of Justice. He's an alumni of Penn State. And he and I sat down and talked. He listens to the show, so hi, Rod, if he's listening today.
Yes, hi, Rod. Appreciate you listening. So what do you got?
He's an alumni of Penn State. He's seen up close this team. He informed me that this offensive line of Penn State was not a good offensive line.
Okay.
He did a lot of that stuff on his own. And that tells you a lot about that kid. Now, I agree that they need to –
Marvin, this is the NFL now. Be careful. This is the NFL. Okay, it's the NFL. Just because Barkley did a lot on his own at Penn State doesn't mean he can do it up here. That's a little different story.
I agree, but that's all we have to go by right now, Paul.
I know. Yeah. I know.
Well, I mean, we said he's a dynamic player, Marvin, so I don't think anybody's going to doubt his potential to create on his own. But there is
potential.
A distinct difference between, of course, the NFL defensive lineman that you're going up against versus the Big Ten defensive lineman that you're going up against.
I totally agree with that. I'm not displaying that, but I'm just saying
–
that don't credit him that he cannot play behind a line.
Right.
That
understood.
It doesn't have to be the Dallas Cowboys. It doesn't have to be that great of a line.
And I agree with you there. I don't
okay.
think that's a
fair enough.
Yeah.
But that's the only thing I had on that draft. If they trade, I mean, there's no right and there's no wrong in this draft. If you want to get a quarterback, then that's what they're going to do. All of us is having our opinion. They're going to do what best they think for the team.
Absolutely.
And we're going to have to deal with it. Real quick, I had Paul was talking about the coaching staff. You have to have a coaching staff. My success in the league that I was in, it all happened because of the coaching staff I had. These guys, we had the same beliefs. I remember days on the sideline. I didn't call the plays. They were my plays. They were my playbook. But I didn't call the plays, defensively or offensively. And I observed the game and allowed me to watch it as a coach and as a fan. And so when I came up with things and I saw things they wasn't about to do, where I walk up to my staff and I say, hey, you got this play here open because they're coming downhill,
yep.
may have a play-action play. And my coordinator would say to me, that play's coming up right now, Marvin. I said, okay, we're on the same page. And the exact same thing would happen on my defensive side. When I think, hey, if you can blitz off the weak side, they're not seeing you coming from the weak side. Oh, that's coming in right now. I just called it. That's the kind of staff I had, that we were so much in tune
yeah.
with each other, that it fed off into the team, and it allowed the team somewhat to have my personality based on my coordinator's play calling.
Bottom line is, Marvin, it's a huge deal, and too many people underestimate the value of it. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, you got to be able to feed off of one another. And sometimes a head coach that can focus on the big picture perspective and have trust in his coordinators, you know, that speaks volumes of the communication between all parties. And those are the teams that have success as well.
Right.
Yep.
And as an assistant in the high school, I remember I was a fan of the head coach, but I wasn't a huge belief in everything he said. But I would tell my kids that I was coaching the position I was coaching. I would say, hey, within what we have to do, we're going to have to do some creative things based on what the head coach wants. I'll do what he wants, but I try to get creative within the things he wanted us to do in the secondary. And it is a big deal. The assistants are a huge deal to head coach's success. I agree with that.
Absolutely. All right, Coach Marvin, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. As that is going to wrap up things for us on today's program, we certainly appreciate everybody for tuning in. We'll be back up and running tomorrow, noon Eastern, giving you the latest on the coaching search and recapping what transpired in the playoffs, as well as what's going to be moving forward here for the New York Giants. With that being said, for Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Monday right here on Giants.com. Have a good one.